Laura. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, Laura is Kopesh.
Oh, you made it, Kalpesh? I'm sorry,
You
I had to run down the
have no, you have enough people today?
hall. I'm still waiting for Rodney. So we have Roy's on vacation. So we have Jeff, Steve. Four. We'll have five. But where'd Bill go?
Did Recording in progress.
No, we have Bill. Yeah, we'll have five without you. And the last one's a use.
Okay. So it should be okay?
I hope so.
Otherwise, I can stay if you want. It's not a big deal, but I would not speak too much.
Okay, how about you just listen and vote?
Yeah. Okay.
Because the last one is a use variance. We would like more members to vote on the use variance if possible. So,
yeah. Okay.
Okay. So you don't have to second tonight. We'll make somebody else do it. How's that?
Yeah. Yeah, please.
All right. Thanks, Kalpesh. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, Cameron, we're just going to wait one more minute. We're waiting for the TV guys to do their thing. Okay, she just yelled, we're good. Give me one second. Okay, ready to go, Chairman.
Oh, thank you. The Zoning Board of Adjustment meeting, please come to order. Adequate notice of this meeting was provided in the following ways. Notice published in the Courier News, notice published on the Bulletin Board of the Municipal, notice made available to Township Clerk, notice sent to the Courier News and Star Ledger. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mr. Tillery?
Here.
Mr. Patel?
Here.
Mr. Blount? Mr. Hidaka?
Here.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Here.
Mr. Ellie?
Here.
And Steve Weissman?
Here. Thank you. Will everyone please stand for the salute to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Mr. Keneally, are there any changes to tonight's agenda?
There are many changes to tonight's agenda. The Santiago matter will be adjourned until September 14th. Have to notice the newspaper and the Board of Ed. If you receive the notice, you will not receive a new notice. 11th Street Partnership is adjourned till September 28th with no further notice. Bronco Development 146 Hillside adjourned to September 28th, no further notice. Bronco Development 160 Hillside Avenue adjourned to September 28th, no further notice. 100 Lakeview Rear.
Everything's
100 Lakeview Rear adjourned till October 12th, no further notice. LNR at
I just need the volume up.
Adjourned until September 28th, no further notice. Those are all the changes I'm aware of.
Correct, Mr. Keneally.
Okay, that was pretty quick. I hope I caught them all. If I don't, please correct me if I ask for one.
I have a list.
So we're going to move right along here.
All right, so we'll start at number five.
Yes. It got buried. 15, 12, 8, 9. Here we go. I'm sorry. This is not my normal office I'm at. No, item 5, 23-ZB-67V, Andrea Calabrese. Is she here?
Yes. Hi, John Sullivan. I'm an attorney with the offices of Vastola and Sullivan representing Ms. Calabrese. I actually have her here in my office, so she'll come on screen in just a moment. Assuming we have jurisdiction, yes, I would indicate that. Thank you. Street address is 440 Webster Avenue. It is lot 18.01 in block 1003 on your tax map. The property is located in an R7 7.5 zone, has a lot area of 7,500 square feet, and is fully improved with a single family dwelling, an attached garage, and a deck to the rear. What brings us before you tonight are bulk variances to permit the site essentially to remain as it is now, and we do need variances for building coverage. 20% is permitted under the ordinance and existing is 21%. And second is for the rear yard setback for the deck, 25 feet is permitted and 15.4 feet are proposed and existing. All of this is pre-existing. We're not proposing any new development. We have submitted a survey prepared by Robert Horvath dated May 1st of this year and several site photographs. And I do have Ms. Calabrese here. I'll ask her to come on screen. And if we can get her sworn in, I will have her give you the particulars.
Ma'am, could you raise your right hand, please? Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
Yes, I do.
Your name and address, please.
Andrea Calabrese, 440 Webster Avenue, Piscataway, New Jersey.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Calabrese, you are the owner of the property at 440 Webster Avenue?
Correct.
And how long have you owned that since?
It was in 1977, so 46 years.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Okay. And you live there?
I'm sorry?
Do you live there?
Yes, I do.
And the house itself, is it the same footprint as when you purchased it in 1977?
That's correct.
You did not put on any additions?
Did not, no.
But you did construct a deck in the rear yard in approximately 1991, is that correct?
That's correct.
And you learned through the town that you needed a variance for that deck?
That's right.
And as part of that, you learned about the variance condition for the building coverage?
Correct.
Now, the deck has been there since 1991?
That's right.
And you provided several photographs showing the rear yard deck?
That's right.
What is the height of that deck?
Approximately a foot, foot and a half.
Okay. And what are the dimensions in terms of width and depth?
About 15 and a half by 15.
And your entire rear yard is fenced in?
Yes, it is.
Have you had any issues with the neighbors due to the deck location?
None whatsoever.
And has your property experienced any drainage issues like ponding and things of that nature?
No, it has not.
And could you just briefly describe your neighborhood?
Certainly. It's on a dead-end street. There are approximately seven houses on the street. There are four on my side and three on the opposite side. It's a mix of ranches, bi-levels, and split levels. And it's a very quiet, typical neighborhood.
And your home is a one-story?
That's correct.
And it's three bedrooms and one bath?
That's right.
And it's not larger than the other houses in the neighborhood, is it?
No, it is not.
Mr. Hinterstein's report, condition number three, is that you would not enclose this with a roof, walls, or any other type of overhead structure.
I would not. No, I would not.
Okay, and you agree to that condition?
Yes, I do.
Okay. That's all I have for Ms. Calabrese.
Thank you. Do you have anyone else?
No.
Okay. Henry, do you want to comment here?
In my report, I pretty much reiterate many of the things that were just stated by Mr. Sullivan and Mrs. Calabrese. The deck is only about a foot off the ground. I don't see really any issue with it. There's a solid fence that surrounds the property that provides buffer and screening. And the coverage variance is de minimis, in my opinion. So I don't really see any issues with the variances, other than, especially if they're agreeing to the condition that that they will not enclose the deck. So that being said, I think it's an okay application.
Thank you. Anyone on the board have any questions, concerns, or statements they'd like to make at this time? Hearing none, I would like to open up this to the public. Anyone in the public have any questions, concerns, or comments at this time? Laura?
No one, Chairman.
Okay, I'd like to close the public portion of the of this application. And I would like to make a motion to approve this application. Can I get a second?
A second.
Chairman.
Thank you, Artie. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Patel?
Yes.
Mr. Hidaka?
Here.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Yes.
Mr. Ali?
Yes.
And Chairman Weissman?
Yes.
Mr. Sullivan, we will memorialize this at our next meeting and send a copy to you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to be back in it for another hearing in a few minutes. Okay. Thank you.
We'll see you later.
See you soon. Okay, moving on. Item number 6, 23ZB74B. Daniel Piper, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Is he here?
They need to unmute. There we are.
Oh, I see him. I see an Arlene Piper. Daniel, are you here?
They're here, but we can't hear them.
They're not muted, right?
No.
I don't see them muted.
They are not muted. Okay. Okay, I guess they're having technical difficulties. If you want to move on to the next
one. Yeah, we'll come back to them.
Yep, number 8.
Number 8, thank you.
Carolyn.
Number 8. Hello? Okay, number 8, 23ZB57B, Carolyn Gorham. Are you here?
Yeah, she's here.
Yes.
Hi, we are here.
Yeah, they are.
There we go.
That is the Gorham fam. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Here we are.
Yeah.
And for anybody that's going to be testifying tonight, could you raise your right hand? You swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
Yes.
One at a time, could I have your name and address, please?
Caroline Gorham, 1648 Short Street, Piscataway, New Jersey.
Put your hands down. And your name, sir?
Robert Johnson, and my address is 66 King George Road, Warren, New Jersey.
Thank you. Could one of you explain to the board what you'd like to do with this property?
Yes. We have a variance on the table to discuss a shed that's on the property, a canopy, and a fence that's on the property right now. The fence has been on the property for, do you know how long?
Since 2009.
Since 2009. We've recently had some curbs and sidewalks installed along Maple Street for the park that's across the street from Mrs. Gorham. The issue with the fence was that it's a bit close to the street. However, the unique shape of the property doesn't allow the fence to be within the normal setbacks of the actual property lines. The house itself sits less than 30 feet from the actual street. And the height of the fence is about 62 inches in height. The good thing about the fence is that it's actually on the side of the house, and it's about 60 feet. It's less than 60 feet from the actual intersection of Short Street and Maple Street. It's actually Short Street, Maple Street, and Ann Street. So the fence doesn't create any blind spots or impede the visibility of that intersection at all. Mrs. Gorham actually needs this fence for privacy in her backyard, and it does create a little bit of security and protection for her home. As for the two sheds, the shed is in the rear corner of the property. It doesn't sit against anyone's home. It's a PVC fence, and it's
Rubbermaid shed.
It's was created and set on a concrete foundation. And as for the canopy sits also sits behind the fence in the rear of the yard, and is actually can't be seen from the street due to trees and shrubbery that's on that side of the property. And that's really all we had for the property. Do you have anything that you wanted to say?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Henry, you have a comment on this? You're muted. Okay.
Yeah, this is a unique property. The majority of the property is front yard. It's not even a rectangle. It's a sort of a irregular shape property with, again, frontage along Short Street, as well as a long frontage along Maple Street. The township recently undertook some road improvement projects, as was stated in the area, which caused the roadway to be, you know, closer and the curb line to be closer now. It's in the right of way, but it's closer to the fence than when it was originally installed. Again, this is really such a unique shaped lot, and there's really very, very limited space on this property if the fence was not to be located where it is along the Maple Street frontage. That being said, it is close to the right of way, but I don't see really, I think the inherent hardships here allow this application to be looked upon favorably. The shed is, in my opinion, is a very modest shed. It's in the back corner. It is screened by the existing fence, similar to the canopy. My only concern would be that if for some reason the shed, again, or the canopy is destroyed and has to be relocated, they should be relocated in a conforming location, not just put in without permits. So again, the condition would be is they're fine for now if it's approved, but if they are destroyed or replaced, they need to be located in a conforming location, and the canopy should not be enclosed, or it should not be converted to a more permanent structure. The canopy is really more of a sort of a portable, it's not really a permanent type canopy. It's one that you would set up. You could easily take it down. So I'm not too concerned with it, but my opinion is it shouldn't be converted to a more permanent type of structure that's anchored with footings or anything of that nature, or any permanent walls put up to enclose that canopy space. That being said, I don't have any issues with the application as long as they're in agreement to that condition.
We're in agreement.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That was answered my question. Anyone on the board have any questions, concerns, or comments at this time? Hearing none, I'd like to open this to the public. Anyone in the public have any questions, concerns, or comments at this time? Laura?
No one, Chairman.
Thank you. I would like to close the public portion of this meeting, and I would like to make a motion to approve this application. Can I get a second?
I'll second it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Tillery. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Patel?
Yes.
Mr. Hidaka?
Yes.
Mr. Minarondo?
Yes.
Mr. Ali?
Yes.
And Chairman Weissman?
Yes.
Your application has been approved. We will memorialize it in a written document at our next meeting and send that document to you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Have a good night.
Good night.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. The pipe is here. Did they get the problem fixed?
Oh, they're here, but I can't hear them. No.
Yeah, we see them, but cannot hear them. Okay, we'll come back. Next item.
I think they should sign off and sign back up.
Number 9?
Yes.
GNA Properties, Property Development. That's 23ZB5555V, GNA Property Development, LLC.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, members of the board. My name is Kevin Morse, Woodbridge, New Jersey, and I'm the attorney representing the applicant, GNA Property Development, LLC. The subject property is Block 614, Lot 3.01, located at 447 Washington Avenue, and we're before you this evening requesting certification of a long existing use of the property, namely a mixed use building that has a commercial unit in the front and a single apartment in the rear, seeking certification that this board determined that that is a lawful pre-existing non-conforming use of the subject property. I had previously submitted our affidavits of publication and mailing and wanted to confirm that they have been received, that they're in order, in order that the board has jurisdiction to proceed.
They have been received and reviewed. They are in order and the board has jurisdiction.
All right, thank you, Mr. Keneally. I have two witnesses available. First, Kristen Antonelli, who is a principal, the applicant. And I have sitting next to me, Angela Vallatuto, who is our licensed professional engineer and professional planner. Now, by way of some background for the board, I'm going to try to go through this very succinctly. The property was acquired, and I will get confirmations for you under oath by the applicant. The property was acquired by the applicant in 2021. The applicant's principals are Giovanni and Kristen Antonelli. Kristen is present again, and we'll swear her for some confirming information. But when they bought the property, it was a mixed-use building, again, as I've described, a commercial unit in the front and an apartment in the rear. The commercial unit had just been vacated. There's an office use in there, and the applicant put a business called the Wax Studio by Anna in the commercial unit, and that business, Wax Studio, personal service business, certainly a conforming use in the C-zone, the property located, began operating. The apartment had just been vacated. There was an elderly tenant who had passed away. And before they put someone in that, the township determined there was a question as to whether or not this site never had any formal site plan approval for the use. And so they held off on re-renting the apartment. The Wax Studio by Anna was in operation, and members of the board may recall that operator appeared before you back in August of 2022 and obtained a temporary use permit so that she could continue operation of the studio business. I was then engaged to review the status of the property, do some research, and I did obtain from the Township Tax Assessor's Office the revaluation cards from both 1956 and 1974, which were submitted as part of the application package as attachments to the application form. Now, both of those revaluation cards show that the subject property contained a mixed-use building, again, a commercial unit and a residential apartment. And in looking at the, in particular, the 1956 revaluation card, which is part of the application packet, that would show that there's a mixed use as configured for 67 years to date. And in fact, if you look at the 1956 revaluation card, it shows there was a barbershop and an apartment on that. That card is particularly important because it also describes that the property itself had been in existence for 30 years. So if we take what we contend is the mixed-use building 30 years prior to that, we're looking at potentially 97 years of the property, almost a century in that configuration. I would call Kristen Antonelli, who is the principal of the applicant, if she could be sworn, please. I see that she is logged in so she can confirm some information.
Ms. Antonelli, could you raise your right hand?
Sure.
Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
Yes.
Your name and address, please.
Kristen Antonelli, 8 Saddlemount Avenue, Warren, New Jersey, 07059.
Thank you.
All right, now, Kristen, you are one of the owners of the applicant together with your husband, Giovanni, correct?
Yes.
Now, you've been logged in and you've listened to my presentation, the background information and description I have given with regard to your acquisition of the property and your use of the property since you have acquired it, correct?
Yes.
Is everything that I've described for the board, is that absolutely true and accurate in every respect?
Yes, it is.
Right. Now, by way of some background for the board, your family, you've been members of the Piscataway business community for about 40 years now, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I understand that your husband is the second generation owner of a business I think a lot of people are familiar with, Capelli's Hair Salon, which is a property close to this property, correct?
Yes.
And you're here this evening because Your family enjoys a longstanding good business neighbor relationship in the community, and you're before the board because you want to continue to maintain that relationship and straighten out or resolve any issues with regard to the subject property, which is a new property for you, correct?
Yes.
And to that end, you engaged Angelo Vallatuto, who prepared what we called an existing conditions plan, and you also had the opportunity to review the memo that's been generated by the Township Division of Engineering, Planning and Development, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I have no further questions of Ms. Antonelli. I wanted to her confirm the information I presented, and I have Angelo Valletudo prepared to address the memo and just to give some additional information for the board's consideration. And Ms. Antonelli will be available during the entire hearing should a question come up.
Is Mr. Valletudo present?
He is. He's sitting next to me. You can barely see him. And I would call him next if you could slide over a little bit.
I'm always in his shadow.
Mr. Valletudo, could you raise your right hand? Do you swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
Yes, sir, I do.
Your name and address, please.
For the record, Angelo J. Valletudo, V-A-L-E-T-U-T-T-O, licensed professional engineer, licensed professional planner in the state of New Jersey.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Valletudo has appeared before this board on numerous occasions and his accomplishments have been accepted.
Thank you. He's accepted.
All right. And again, I just want to confirm that will be in his capacity as both professional engineer and professional planner to be commenting in both regard.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So now, Mr. Valletudo, you prepared and we submitted what we called an existing conditions plan for the subject property, correct?
Yes, sir. That's correct. And as always, engineers would be nothing without the surveyor who did the basic. Okay. So we use that as our basis.
And now the reason you were engaged, even though we're seeking a certification and not seeking a site plan approval, is because we wanted to demonstrate that the site itself, which contains the existing mixed-use building, actually supports that use and it sort of makes sense. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Correct.
All right. Now, also, it further confirms, at least from what I understand, that from an engineering or a site standpoint, the township's tax records and the way the property is configured are true and accurate with regard to the mixed-use building. Is that right?
That is correct. As you indicated, the earliest it goes back to is 56, and at that time, it called the building was age of approximately 30 years. We have to go back to 53, so we're more than beyond that point, in my opinion.
All right. Now, we had the opportunity to review with the applicant, the memorandum dated January 18th, 2023 by the Township's Division of Engineering Planning Development, correct?
Yes, sir, we did.
Now, typically, you know, when we're here on a certification case and not a site plan approval, I suppose technically the board does not have the authority often to impose conditions. But in speaking with the applicant and certainly in the spirit of cooperation and consistent with the applicant's intent to continue to be a good business neighbor in the community, the applicant is prepared to comply with the requested improvements, which are set forth as items 2 through 5 in that memorandum. Is that correct?
That's correct. And really the basis for us when we did the plan showing it as existing conditions, we wanted to show that it can support the use in terms of the ability for off-street parking. We did show striping, but that again was to show the board and its professionals that we can meet the off-street parking, and we could also meet the various comments in Mr. Hinkelstein's report in terms of the parking, the handicap parking, and dedicating spaces, 2 spaces for the tenant. And certainly number 5, any condition on the property or along its frontage that needs repair will be repaired.
Okay. And again, while these changes don't require a site plan approval, this applicant, again, just in terms of enhancing the property, making it better since their purchase, was really prepared to do really the things that are suggested by Mr. Hinterstein, just in terms of property maintenance, upkeep, and enhancement. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that's correct. They want to do everything proper, and which is why we're here this evening.
All right. Now, putting on your planner's hat for a moment, you reviewed the revaluation cards that were provided to us by the tax assessor and supplied to the board, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. You visited the property in the surrounding area, correct?
I have.
You've looked and reviewed, and as a professional engineer, the physical structure itself, correct?
Correct. And it's clearly one that, while having an advanced age, is in good shape.
All right. But from a planning standpoint, would it be your opinion that the property configuration that we presented consistent with the tax assessor records that this mixed-use building would have predated the ordinance of 1953?
Most definitely.
All right. All right, I have no further questions of Mr. Vallatuto.
Mr. Chairman, I submitted a report dated June 21st, and there are two questions raised in that report. One of them is a statement. I agree that it pre-exists the ordinance. But the other one is the documentation of where the retail or commercial use is and the apartment use is not clear in the application.
All right. Now, Mr. Chadwick, I must tell you, we have never received the memo because I would have already called upon Mr. Vallatuto to address that, but we're happy to address your comments. We submitted as part of the application package an actual
sketch
building layout showing the both the physical, the room configurations. There's two rooms. It's a sketch in the application packet for the commercial. And then it also shows the configuration of the apartment, which is a one bedroom apartment with a living room, kitchen, seating area, and bath. So that should have been part of your application.
For whatever reason, I did not review it. Okay. It was probably sent, and it's my mistake. Okay. But there is a document as part of the file. It would be part of the, if the board approves this, clear document. The other one, my review of the property showed a lot of electric meters. Do you know what that's all about?
No, I don't. I must tell you, I don't know that Ms. Antonelli, I can ask her, knows about that. They've only owned the property since 2021. Clearly, there are only two units there, and we are only seeking certification for two units. I would ask Ms. Antonelli, do you know the status of the electric meters there?
I can tell you that that there are two accounts, like two PSE&G accounts.
Right.
One was from the front and one was from the back. So they're separated. So I can tell you that. That's all okay. I know.
All right. Why don't we just leave it just this way? They'll be separate. They are and will continue to be separate utilities to the individual uses.
Yes.
No objection there.
Fine. Thank you.
And I apologize that your memo, I would have not glossed over that.
Yes.
Anything else, sir?
No.
Mr. Chadwick. Okay. Thank you. Henry?
I do not have anything. I believe that everything in my report has been addressed. They're willing to comply. So I do not have anything for. Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Morse, do you have any other?
I won't belabor the testimony. Look, clearly the township's own records bring us back to 1956 without question. We need that extra 3 years because the ordinance went in effect in 53. But I think all things considered, you know, the separate meters, the configuration of the property, the age of the structure, I think this board can, I respectfully submit fines and determine that this mixed-use building predates the ordinance so that it should be certified as a pre-existing non-conforming use. And if the board were to look favorably again, although technically conditions would not be able to be imposed, this applicant, if we stated, are willing to agree to the conditions as presented by Mr. Chadwick and Mr. Hinterstein's and this member, their memo, should you look favorably upon the application.
Thank you. Anyone on the board? I'd like to open this up to the board. Any members of the board have any questions, concerns, or comments at this time?
Hello.
Hearing none? Me? Who's that?
Can you hear me?
We're not doing public yet.
I didn't. Let the board go first. I'll open to the public. Hearing no comments from the board, I'd like to open this up to the public. Anyone from the public have any questions, concerns, or comments at this time? Now you have an opportunity.
Yes.
Can you please state your name?
I have a question. Mahmoud Ahmed.
Okay, Mr. Ahmed, I need to swear you in. Could you raise your right hand? Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
Yes.
And your address, please?
138 Hillside Avenue, Piscataway, New Jersey.
And your question is?
We had a date today, but the password given is wrong, and we couldn't get in. My neighbor had the same problem. We couldn't get in to put our opinion vote.
Mr. Keneally, they called. I gave them the correct number. They had it backwards, 282, to get in. You're here for the Hillside applications?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, they were postponed till September 28th.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not going forward this evening.
Okay, thank you.
So they will be on for September 28th.
Yes. Yeah, so call the office in a few weeks and I'll give you the correct, the new Zoom information for you to log on.
Sure, can you give me the number I should call?
We're in the middle of a meeting. Call the office tomorrow that you called earlier.
Sure. All right.
Thank you.
All right, good luck.
Goodbye. Have a good night. Anyone else in the public have any comments, questions, or concerns?
For this application.
For this application, thank
you. No one, Chairman.
Ms. Buckley?
No one, Chairman.
Thank you. I'd like to close the public portion of on this request, and I would like to make a motion to approve this application, meeting all the requirements laid up by Mr. Hinterstein and Mr. Chadwick. Can I get a second?
Artie.
Thank you, Artie. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Patel?
Yeah.
Mr. Hidaka?
Yes.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Yes.
Mr. Ali?
Yes.
Chairman Weissman?
Yes.
Right. Mr. Morse will memorialize this at our next meeting and send you a copy.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a pleasant evening.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too.
Thank you.
Chairman?
Yes.
The Pipers are on.
Oh, terrific. Let me get back to the Piper question here.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. Are you the Pipers?
Okay, yes.
Okay, I need to swear to you. You raise your right hand. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
Yes.
Okay, could I have each of your names and addresses, please?
Daniel Piper, 21 Birch Run Drive.
Arlene Piper, 21 Birch Run Drive, Piscataway.
Thank you. Could one of you explain to the board why you're here?
We are doing a bulk variance because we were told that the variance has to be done on the house before we can get an approval for a addition put on the house.
Okay. Henry, do you have any questions at this point?
Well, the applicant came in to, I think, my understanding is to submit permits for an addition, as he stated. When we looked at the survey and they did a site inspection of the property, it appeared that there was a deck to the rear of the existing garage and also a shed type structure that was added to the side of the garage without permits. That's why they're here, is because of those items. Now, can you confirm that the deck from behind the garage, I believe you said it was removed?
Yes, I submitted pictures to that.
Okay, so it was tough to see in those pictures. So I just wanted to confirm that the deck was removed. So really the only issue is the sort of addition of sort of that shed to the side of the garage. Again, this is next to the Bertrand Drive multifamily development. So there's no, I don't think, structure that close to the side of this property. And there is a solid PVC fence that exists on the multifamily side of the development. My concern would be is it appears that you have sort of a dilapidated fence that's up against their fence. Fortunately, you can't see it from the other side, but you may want to consider taking that out. And if the board finds it favorable or finds the application favorable, my suggestion would be is that they need to submit for a building permit to make sure that shed structure was constructed in a manner that's safe. So that it doesn't fall on somebody. So any approval should be conditioned upon them getting a building permit so that the building department can go out and do an inspection of the structure to make sure it's safe. Other than that, I really don't have two. Again, the structure appears to have been there for quite some time. Again, it was done legally. It's really, you know, the board's up to the board. I don't see it having a huge impact on the neighboring property due to the existing fence that's there and the shape of the shed. It's relatively low in nature as far as the height, because it's the height of the garage eave. So I don't see a huge issue with it. My only concern would be is that a building permit be secured so that we can confirm that the structure is safe and sound.
Miss Piper, do you understand what Ms. Hentestine is saying?
Yes.
The fence that's falling down, the townhouse put it up. So we would have to ask them if we can take it down, I guess.
Didn't they install a vinyl fence on their side?
Yeah, they put that also.
So they put the second fence up without taking the other fence down?
Correct.
Yes, the wooden fence was up for quite a while.
Okay. Again, you may want to contact them then and see if you can work something out with them or see if they don't care that you dispose of it. It's just, as long as it's not falling apart, I don't have a problem with it staying. It's on your side of the property. If you guys have an issue with it, then since they put up a second fence adjacent to that, my suggestion would be is that, you know, you really don't need that additional fence. It's just going to keep deteriorating and eventually will fall apart if it hasn't yet. So you may want to contact them and see if they'll remove it for you if it's on their property.
All right.
And you will pursue a permit for the other structure, correct?
A permit for what structure?
For the shed, right?
Yes, the shed.
Yes.
This is a bulk variance permit, isn't this?
No.
Okay, so.
This is a bulk variance.
Okay.
The variance allows you to keep the shed in the location that you built it illegally. It doesn't negate the fact that you didn't take out a building permit for that, and the fact
if there was a building permit taken out for that building, because when we moved into the house, it's on the original survey. We've been here for close to 30 years now.
Well, you could find out from the building department if there was a permit. All you'd have to do is secure that permit that was taken out, and if there's no building permit on file for that, you would then just have to take it out and the building department will do an inspection.
All right, so I guess I'll have to come up tomorrow to the DPW and find that out.
You could always do an OPR request as well through the clerk's office and ask if any building permits were ever secured for a shed, garage, addition, for the property. If they have any on record, they will email it to you.
Okay, so I have to talk to Laura tomorrow.
Call me tomorrow. I'll explain what you need to do tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else on the board have any questions, concerns, or comments at this time? Hearing none, I would like to open this to the public. Anyone on the public have any questions, concerns, or comments on this request? Laura?
One person, Pat.
Pat?
Hi.
Hi, I need to swear you in. Could you raise your right hand?
Yes.
The testimony you're about to give should be the truth.
Yes.
Your name and address, please.
Pat O'Mara, 139 Keswick Drive, Piscataway.
Thank you.
Now, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, ma'am.
I had a question. I know that you're talking about the structure, but I had received some copies from Laura that it looked like there was an addition being put onto the house itself for 21 Bertrand Drive.
Laura, can you?
Yeah, I explained this. I believe I talked to you over the phone. The addition is legal. The variance is not for the addition. The addition is conforming where it's supposed to be. That's legal. The existing structure that was there needed the variance application. Okay. So whether they had that shed or not, that addition was going to be legal. We're not here for the addition.
Okay, that's what I just want to clarify.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So okay. Yeah, so the addition's fine. It's conforming. It's perfectly where it's supposed to be. They're just here for the shed only, not for the addition.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify.
You're so welcome, Pat.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the public?
No one else, Chairman.
Thank you, Laura. I'd like to close the public portion of this request. And I'd like to make a motion to approve this application. Can I get a second?
A second.
I'll second.
Thank you, Marty. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Patel?
Yeah.
Mr. Hidaka?
Yes.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Yes.
Mr. Ali?
Yes.
And Chairman Weissman?
Yes.
Your application has been approved. We will memorialize it in a written document at our next meeting and send that document to you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Moving on to item number 10. That's 23ZB78B. Dania Duran?
Dania Duran.
Yes, correct, Chairman.
I need to swear you in. Could you raise your right hand? Before the testimony you're about to give should be the truth.
Yes, sir.
Your name and address, please.
Dania Duran, 300 Highland Avenue, Piscataway, New Jersey.
Ms. Duran, could you explain to the board why you're here?
Yes, sir. The board and Mr. Hinterstein were kind enough to approve a variance back in January 26th of this year. The condition that Mr. Hinterstein provided us with was to create build an addition with a 8.5 setback to our side yard. At that time, our blueprint for our addition was at 12 feet wide, creating a 6.5 setback. We then went back to the drawing board and brought forth an addition at 10 feet wide, subtracting the 2 feet, thinking that the setback would be cleared at 8.5. Unfortunately, we have learned the hard way that the 10-foot wide addition does not completely clear that 8.5 setback. I am here this evening seeking a variance to try to retain our addition. I am in receipt of Mr. Hinterstein's report, and I completely agree with him. We should have gotten the addition correct to clear that 8.5 setback. I surely did not want or plan to be before you again this evening seeking a second variance. However, based on the survey, the way the house is built on an angle, that a corner of the addition was not cleared by that 8.5 setback. That is our only saving grace, is that the majority of the addition clears the 8.5 setback with no problem. However, we are short in that back corner by 8 inches of the setback. So I'm here this evening seeking a variance for the 8 inches of that corner setback, with my sincere apologies to Mr. Hinterstein and the board for not getting it right the first time.
Thank you. Henry, do you have any observations here?
Yeah, I mean, she outlined it pretty well. Again, I just want to reiterate, you know, case law is pretty clear on this matter that, you know, it's the homeowner's responsibility and their employees / engineers, contractors, surveys to get it right. If everybody came in and said, oh, my contractor made a mistake, they did this, they did that, the problem is we would just have people just doing then whatever they wanted. And again, and obviously it's 8 inches, it's a corner. I totally take, you know, Ms. Duran for her word that it wasn't her intention. That being said, you know, the mistake happened. Again, the saving grace here is it really only impacts a small corner of the home because the home is skewed to the property line and the setback line. So it really isn't a huge impact. So again, I think in this particular case, you can I think favorably approve this application with that additional 8 inches, I think being de minimis in nature since it only affects a small portion of the corner of the addition. But again, it's the homeowner's responsibility to manage their employees on construction sites for future reference and to, you know, to check what's going on during that construction. But again, I don't, because of the small nature of this encroachment, I don't see any issues with it.
Thank you, Mr. Hinterstein, and my apologies again.
And this is only, this addition will only be a one-story addition, right?
Correct, yes, sir.
It'll stay that way. Okay, good.
Yes, sir.
Anyone on the board have any questions, comments, or concerns at this time? Hearing none, I'd like to open it to the public. Anyone in the public have any questions, concerns, or comments at this time?
No one, Chairman.
Thank you. I'd like to close the public portion. I'd like to make a motion to approve this application. Can I get a second?
I'll second it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Will the secretary please call the roll?
Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Patel?
Yes.
Mr. Hidaka?
Yes.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Yes.
Mr. Ali?
Yes.
And Chairman Weissman?
Yes.
Ms. Duran, your application for amended approval has been granted. We'll memorialize it in a written document at our next meeting and mail it to you.
Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Have a great evening, everyone. Thank you.
Good night.
Laura,
I just want to verify, number 12 is next. That's T-Mobile?
Yes, T-Mobile, and then the last one, Sanders, and then Kalpesh could go back to sleep.
Okay, thank you. Item number 12. 23-ZB-45/46B, T-Mobile Northeast LLC.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Edward Purcell. I'm an attorney at Price, Meese, Shulman, and D'Arminio. Here tonight on behalf of T-Mobile Northeast. With respect to the subject property, that's Block 5301, Lot 14.04, that's 5051 South Washington Avenue. T-Mobile currently operates an existing wireless communications facility that is antennas on top of an existing building by way of a 2003 zoning board approval. And that particular building is being replaced pursuant to a redevelopment plan. And T-Mobile will be permitted to place its antennas back onto that building when it's constructed. But, you know, that's going to take approximately 2 years between the time that building comes down and when a new building replaces it. So obviously the need for wireless service is consistent. T-Mobile can't wait for 2 years to provide service. So as a stopgap measure, T-Mobile is proposing a temporary ballast mount tower that's at roughly the same height as its existing locations to operate while this building is under construction. And as will be discussed, T-Mobile would agree to stipulate as a condition of the approval that the approval that we're asking for that temporary tower would expire 90 days after a CO is issued for that new building. So again, it ensures it's a temporary approval. This isn't going to run with the land into perpetuity. Just by way of background, the properties in the LI5 zone where the use is conditionally permitted. We do need a few D3 use variances with respect to setbacks. And the reason that we need those variances is because we have to place the antennas and the towers towards the edge of the property in order to permit the construction of the new building. But as will be discussed from an RF perspective, it's important to keep the facility here on this building at the same heights that it is currently located on in order to provide a comparable coverage to what exists today. We do have three experts that are going to provide testimony tonight. There's John Bosco, he's our engineer. Daniel Check, he's going to provide radio frequency testimony. And then Tim Kronk, our planner, is going to be providing planning testimony. With that, I'd like to move on to our first witness, John Bosco.
Mr. Bosco, are you present? Is Mr. Bosco present?
John, can you hear us?
Yes, you're good, John.
Okay, could you raise your right hand? Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth? I'm having trouble hearing Mr. Bosco.
Yeah, he's very
low. John, can you get closer to your mic?
Is this better?
Yes.
A little bit, yeah. Mr. Bosco, could you provide your qualifications and experience with respect to engineering?
Yes, I have a BS degree in civil engineering from Lehigh University. I have over 40 years of experience, including 15 years in the telecommunications industry. And I am a registered professional engineer in the state of New Jersey.
I think his credentials are good. You can proceed as an expert.
Okay. Mr. Bosco, could you, provide your testimony, review the surrounding areas, the conditions of the site and so on and so forth?
Yes.
And feel free to share the screen and show the plans, which you've been provided to the board.
I will do that. What we have on the screen is the set of plans prepared by my firm, French and Perello Associates, describing, as Mr. Purcell indicated, the existing conditions and the proposed location of the temporary tower on the subject property. Here you can see a detail showing the proposed temporary tower and what's called a ballast frame at grade, which will support the tower and support it against any wind loads. These are the proposed antennas which will be placed on the tower, a total of 12 antennas. These antennas are existing on the roof of the existing structure, which, as Mr. Purcell indicated, will be demolished. So the exact same antennas will be relocated once the temporary tower is installed onto the new tower. These are details of the equipment cabinets supporting the antennas and a detail of the ballast frame base.
All right, Mr. Bosco, can you just begin, just talk about the review of the surrounding areas to orient the board to the location of the site?
If we go back to the plan view, you can see the subject building in the center of the plot. You can see Interstate 287 to the right and Washington Avenue at the bottom of the sheet. There are adjacent industrial commercial buildings to the left of the subject property, and then a small residential area in the upper right corner of the plan.
And the site's located in the LI5 light industrial zone, is that right?
That is correct.
Thanks. And the parcel is approximately 10.1 acres in size?
That's also correct.
And there's an existing office building on the property. That's what's in the center there?
That's what's located in the center, correct.
And there's antennas on that building. Do you know the height of those antennas? Is it 56.9 feet?
The center line of the antennas is at 56.9 feet above grade.
And how's access provided to the property?
A paved driveway from Washington Avenue.
Right. It's South Washington Avenue, I believe, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. And what's the purpose of the temporary tower?
Temporary tower will provide a temporary location for the existing antennas, which will be removed from the existing roof of the existing building before that building can be demolished. It'll be, as you said, approximately 2 years to demolish that building and then construct a new warehouse on the property.
And right now the interior portions of the building are being demolished. Is that correct?
That is in progress. That's correct.
And the actual building won't be demolished until the exterior, until the temp tower is up and the antennas can be removed from the existing building. Is that right?
That's exactly the purpose of the temporary tower.
Yeah. And the antennas will be placed at, when they come back to the building, once it's constructed the new building, antennas will be placed at 57 feet on the new permanent building, the new warehouse. Is that correct?
On the new building at 57 feet, correct.
Okay. All right. So the antennas are staying at essentially the same height going from the existing building to the temporary and then back to the new building. Is that right?
Three steps. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Are there any utility easements on the property that impact our installation?
There are none.
Yeah. And why is the ballast man tower being placed at the edge of the property as opposed to a location on the property where it would comply with all setbacks?
Well, as you mentioned, there's going to be quite a bit of demolition and construction activity where the existing building is now. So to get the tower and the antennas away from that activity, we selected the location to the far left in the parking lot on the plan there. And that will allow all the demolition and construction activity to take place without interference.
And that location is sort of on the far extreme away from the residential zone that the property abuts. Is that correct?
It's the furthest away from that residential area.
Yeah. Okay. And the ballast mount blocks, can you talk about those dimensions, what the purpose of the ballast blocks is?
Yes. The ballast frame itself is 15 feet square. The ballast blocks are large concrete blocks, which are needed to resist wind loads on this tower to prevent overturning.
Those are very large and weighty, correct? Those ballast mount blocks, those aren't going anywhere, I would say.
Necessarily quite large in order to resist the wind load overturning moments.
And will the equipment that is required for the antennas be placed on top of the ballast mount blocks?
Yes, they will.
Okay. Is there a generator for this site?
There is no generator proposed. It will only be battery backup.
Okay. And can you talk about the chain link fence that's going to be around the ballast mount blocks? And perhaps maybe you can move to the portion of the plans where that's shown.
You can see on this sheet, we will have a 7-foot temporary chain link fence around the ballast frame. This will be 20 feet by 20 feet. The dimensions of the chain link fence.
And that
is shown on this particular plan.
And with respect to the temp tower, the site's unmanned. Is that right?
The site is unmanned. It's monitored electronically, remotely, and it will be visited by a technician approximately every 4 to 6 weeks.
And have you prepared or reviewed a structural analysis for this proposed ballast mount tower?
Yes, we have reviewed the structural analysis for the tower.
And will the applicant provide that structural analysis to the township as a compliance item?
That's correct.
I think you would have to provide that anyways when you pull construction permits. Is that your understanding?
I'm sorry?
I said a structural analysis is generally required with respect to pulling construction permits. Is that your understanding? That's correct.
That's correct.
All right. Is the tower designed in accordance with all applicable code requirements?
Yes, it is.
And what happens if there's a failure with respect to the tower?
Well, in the very unlikely event of a failure, keeping in mind that these structures are designed for very high wind loads per the TIA 222 antenna code, in this case, 113 miles per hour. But if there were an overload condition, the most likely failure scenario would be a buckling within the shaft of the tower, such that you would have, in effect, what looks like a bent drinking straw. It would fold at that point of failure, and basically the upper portion would be hanging onto the shaft.
Okay. Can other cellular communications carriers co-locate onto the proposed tower?
It's possible. It's probably not likely, due to the fact that there are no other existing carriers on the existing building roof. There's certainly capacity in the temporary tower should a co-location be required, but it's not in the plans, and as I said, probably unlikely.
Will there be any ground disturbance or excavation related to the project?
No, the ballast frame will be placed on the existing paving parking lot. There'll be a 6-inch thick layer of leveling stone placed before the ballast frame is located on the parking lot pavement, and that is the only activity.
All right, just moving on to the zoning requirements in the LI5 zone, could you go over what the applicant is requesting tonight and what variances are needed?
We're requesting minor site plan approval and variance relief, specifically approval for a minimum side yard setback. The code requires 50 feet and T-Mobile proposes 17 and a half feet to the nearest point of the ballast mount frame and 25 feet to the tower itself. D3 conditional use variance relief. Code requires a minimum setback of 1,000 feet to the nearest residential property line. T-Mobile proposes a setback of 553 feet from the nearest corner of the ballast frame. Also a minimum setback of 200 feet from all property lines. T-Mobile proposes a setback of 17 and a half feet at the nearest property line on the left side of that plan we looked at. Height variance relief. Code requires a 50 foot maximum height for principal and accessory structures. T-Mobile proposes 61 and a half feet in height to the top of the antennas.
Okay. And is it, with respect to the code's definition of a minor site plan, the code defines a minor site plan as development that is less than 10,000 square feet, is that correct?
That's correct, and we are well less than that.
Okay, and that's why we're applying for a minor site plan, is that right?
Also correct.
Yeah. Can you just go over the lighting and impact on neighboring properties?
The only light proposed is a work light near the chain link fence. This will be pointed downward, and this light is on an automatic timer, so it shuts off within the selected time.
And as far as technicians, when they come to visit the site, is there parking spaces available?
There are many parking spaces on the existing parking lot, which will be used by the technician.
Correct, okay. And then is there any impact on trees with respect to the proposed ballast mount tower?
There's no trees are anticipated to be removed during this process.
And can you again explain the process for placing the applicant's facilities from the existing office building to the temp tower and then back to the new building?
Exactly. As we said, the existing towers, existing antennas on top of the existing building roof will remain there while the temporary tower is being installed. At the time that the temporary tower is complete, those antennas will be relocated to the temporary tower and demolition of the exterior of the existing building can begin. The construction of the new warehouse will then begin when it is complete and the roof is ready. The antennas will once again be moved off of the temporary tower to the roof of the new warehouse.
And what is the applicant's procedure for snow removal, for providing access to the site if there's snow on the ground?
Either the technician, the T-Mobile will hire an outside company to plow, or it's possible that they will plow themselves in case of snow.
And will the removal of the monopole, the ballast mount tower, include restoration of all areas and removal of all the equipment?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have for Mr. Bosco.
Thank you, Mr. Bosco. Next witness.
Does any member of the board or the public have any questions for Mr. Bosco or Mr. Chairman, or do you want to do that all at the end?
I'd like to do the questions at the end, Mr. Okay. Keneally.
Sure. Okay.
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Next, I'd like to call Daniel Check. He's
Mr.
our
Check, radio are you present? Expert.
Hello.
Daniel, can you hear us? Yep.
Could you raise your right hand? Where the testimony you're about to give should be the truth.
Yes.
Your name and address, please.
63 Beaverbrook Road, Lincoln Park, New Jersey.
And your name and spell the last name, please.
Daniel Check, C-Z-E-C-H.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Check, can you go over your qualifications and experience?
I have a bachelor's degree in engineering from NGIT with an emphasis on communication systems. I'm experienced in running propagation analysis on wireless carriers, and I've calculated several RF emissions for FCC compliance.
Mr. Check, is your requisites are excellent. You can be perceived as an expert. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Check, have you reviewed the radio frequency justification report dated October 5th, 2022, prepared by Francis Bisciolte?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and we've marked that report as Exhibit A1. Mr. Check, can you just pull that exhibit up? And I'm sure you'll use it during your testimony.
Yes.
You can share your screen and show it to everybody.
Mr. Chairman, can I interrupt a second, Mr. Parcell?
Yes, Mr. Chadwick.
This site is part of the system and operating and previously approved by the township. And we're moving the actual facility maybe 100 or 200 feet on the existing site. So in terms of proving a need for the facility, it's part of the network now. It would not seem that we would have to reprove this.
Well, that's part of our testimony to say that, Mr. Check, I believe, is going to talk about how it's like a puzzle piece and we're just, putting the puzzle
moving
piece
it over.
In.
All right. I'm just trying to
expedite things.
Compromise on testimony.
We'll do it very quickly with Mr. Check. We'll take out the bells and whistles, try to get through it.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Check, can you briefly review Mr. Check, can you just kind of go over using your exhibits, can you identify the existing coverage, the coverage with the sites decommissioned and the coverage with the proposed sites?
Yes. So if we take a look at the map titled T-Mobile's existing 2100 megahertz LTE coverage, this shows all the existing on-air sites that are located on the map. They're shown with dark blue markers. So in the center of the map, we have site NJ06442. From the northeast, we have NJ06528. From the east, we have NJ06240. And from the west, we have NJ 06955, and coverage is shown with a light blue hue showing in-building commercial coverage and light green showing in-building residential coverage. Then we take a look at the next exhibit. We have T-Mobile's existing 2100 megahertz coverage with outsite NJ06442, that is the rooftop mount. And then we could see that much of the coverage in the center of the map is lost and gaps are created. These are bound by Cumberland Road from the north, Stelton Road from the east, County Road 609 from the south, Gallagher Plain from the west. And this affects businesses such as Walmart, ShopRite, CubeSmart, several warehouses in the area, as well as many residents that will lose in-building coverage. And then
Continue.
And then if we take a look at the next exhibit, we have T-Mobile's existing 2100 megahertz LTE coverage with the proposed temporary site. And this is showing how coverage is restored once the temporary site is installed. You know, gaps are filled as they were before. So due to the site being similar in height and the location being rather close to the existing facility, coverage stays very close to what it was previous.
And then Mr. Check, could you just go over very briefly in the same way the 700 megahertz frequency band maps?
Yes. So here we have T-Mobile's existing 700 megahertz LTE coverage. 700 megahertz frequency band is able to propagate a little farther due to the nature of the band, but T-Mobile still sees a coverage lost when the site is taken offline. So now if you look at the map, this is T-Mobile's existing 700 megahertz LTE coverage without the site, NJ06442. And we could see that there are coverage gaps that are present in the area. And then once again, if we take a look at T-Mobile's existing 700 LTE coverage with the proposed temporary site, we can see that that coverage is once again restored.
Right. And then and just looking at those maps, obviously, you know, it's a commercial area, right? And the area adjacent to this site, what this is showing is that if you want to go back to the last slide where it shows with the gap created, then that commercial area only becomes suitable for in-building residential coverage. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Then if you're in one of those commercial buildings, you won't be able to have service, basically.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. And then again, just to clarify, is it important from an RF perspective to maintain the location and height to the existing facility as much as possible to keep the necessary coverage?
Yes.
Okay. And it's like a puzzle piece, right? Is that how you describe it? That, you know, in 2003, we got the approval to put this here. It filled that puzzle piece. Puzzle piece is coming out. Temp Tower puts the puzzle piece back. Is that a good way to describe it?
That would be a pretty good way of describing it.
Okay. All right, just moving on to the emissions analysis. This was previously sent to the board, the September 21, 2022 EMF report. Mr. Check, can you show that on your screen?
One second.
We marked that as exhibit A2.
I think I closed it. I'm sorry. Let me just open it really quickly.
Okay. So, Mr. Check, have you reviewed this report?
Yes.
And can you describe the applicable FCC and New Jersey standards?
So the standards that are used for the analysis are the FCC standards, which are conservative nature of standards, and the New Jersey Radiation Protection Act standards.
Okay. And can you describe the methodology of the analysis?
Our tests are based on worst case, and they are conservative and cumulative. They assume that all the antennas are on and there is no cable loss.
And can you review the findings of the analysis?
So our analysis reported that the proposed T-Mobile facility would emit 7.5% of the FCC allowable limit. That's 13 times below the limit, and 1.5% of the New Jersey maximum permissible exposure limit for the general public. And that's 66 times below the limit. And obviously, this is well below the limit.
Okay. And again, you know, so the, obviously the existing antennas comply with those FCC and state requirements. Is that right?
That is correct. And
these antennas are on the same height, the same antennas, so it's the same type of RF impact, which is still compliant. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I have for Mr. Check.
Thank you, Mr. Check.
Dan, you can take that off the screen. Thank you very much. All right, next, I would like to call Mr. Kronk, who's our planner.
Mr. Kronk, are you present?
I am present.
Could you raise your right hand? Do you swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
I do.
Mr. Kronk, can you just provide your background and educational qualifications?
Yes. I believe Mr. Kronk has been accepted as a professional planner before this board on several prior applications.
Yes, I have, including the original approval on this building in 2003.
Great. We can proceed.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Kronk, have you reviewed the zoning ordinances and the redevelopment plan for this site in the master plan?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Mr. Kronk, we submitted as Exhibit A3 to the board November 22nd, 2022, two photo simulations to the board. Is that correct?
Two photo simulations? I believe it's
November, we submitted a photo simulation to the board dated November 22nd, 2022. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And then we marked those as Exhibit A3. We also submitted an aerial that you provided as Exhibit A4. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Kronk, can you review the surrounding area and the zoning of the site and then review the photo sims?
Yes. Subject property is located in the LI5 zone. This is a zone that conditionally permits wireless telecommunications. The proposed application by T-Mobile does have two deviations from the conditional use standards. The first one is the setback from the nearest residential property line. 1,000 feet is required by ordinance, and the proposal by T-Mobile is for a setback of 553 feet.
Could you just show the aerial real quick and then the photo sims, just so
sure.
See proposed, and then we'll get into it.
Sure. The photo sims are marked A3. I'll actually go to the aerial that's marked A4. And share screen. Do you have that?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. This is a Google Earth image with a date of June 19th of 2022. It gets marked as Exhibit A4 with the subject proposed tower location represented by the red dot approximately in the center of the aerial, labeled site. The existing building is just south of there, along Washington Plaza Drive. Property abuts 287 to the south, South Washington Avenue to the west, and a warehouse building to the north. Self-storage facility to the northeast, and then a small section of residential properties along New Brunswick Avenue. This area is zoned R10 and is a little triangle wedge that runs from Stelton Road along 287 back to Stelton. As I mentioned, subject property is in the LI5 zone. And outside of the R10 properties, pretty much everything else on here is LI5 with a small band of GB general business along Stelton Road.
Okay, and just the photos?
Yep, and just so there are four yellow dots on the aerial photo exhibit here. A4, those represent the four photo locations that I will go to next. The first one is one in the parking lot of the subject property, and you'll see that one is illustrative because it's the only location where the tower and the compound could be seen. So that's actually why I did a simulation from this location, was because there was nothing off site where you could get a full view of the tower. Number two is over on New Brunswick Avenue. Number three is up on Stelton, and number four is out on South Washington by the intersection of the entrance road. Okay, and okay, do you have photo simulations? Can everybody see them?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So the photo simulations were prepared based upon a balloon test. That balloon test was performed on September 8th of 2022 for the purpose of preparing the visual analysis. The red weather balloon that's in the middle of this first exhibit was floated to a height of 61.5 feet, and then photographs of visible locations in the surrounding area were taken, and those photographs do accurately depict the existing conditions at that time. So this is the first one that's in the actual parking lot of the property at 1551 South Washington. And then if we go to the next photo, this is the actual simulation. And in the simulation, the red weather balloon has been removed and the proposed T-Mobile tower at 61 feet, 6 inches with 12 antennas has been inserted via computer simulation as depicted on the engineering drawings. And as I mentioned, this one was more for the board just to see the whole tower since it was not visible from anywhere off site. So you can see the 12 antennas, same as the currently on the rooftop of the subject property, the proposed tower and the compound and ballast frame that would be visible from this location. Next photo is the one. Next photo location is on New Brunswick Road. This is a photo location that's 700 feet away. This is actually taken. There's two residential properties in the R10 that abut the LI5, and then there's a little strip of New Brunswick that runs along the abuts the subject property. This is kind of right in between those two houses where the road abuts subject property. And this is a photo from the same date with the red weather balloon visible in the photo. And then on the photo simulation, the proposed tower, the portion of the tower that would be visible from this location has been inserted into the photo. Next one is the location from 521 Stelton Road. This is by the Goodyear Tire. Balloons just visible over this property, over the roof in the center of the photo, and then in the computer simulation, what would be visible from this location has been inserted into the photo. And last photo number four, this is the one from Washington Plaza in South Washington. So actually the building on the left here is the adjacent building, not the existing, because we're kind of tucked it back in the corner behind here. So we have the balloon at 61 feet, 6 inches, and then the tower inserted via a computer simulation for the portion of the tower that would be visible from this location.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cronk. Can you just go over the zoning for the site?
Yes, as I mentioned, the property is in the LI5 zone. We do have the two conditional use standard deviations. There's also one more variance required in the nature of a C variance. The underlying LI5 zone does have a 50-foot setback requirement. And as was testified to, our actual tower is 25 feet, and then we have 17 feet, 5 inches that would be from the property line to the actual ballast frame. Normally in these situations, we're measuring to a tower that doesn't have a frame. So we would just normally address the tower setback, but in this one, we just pointed out both distances that we have because of an unusual situation. And lastly, there is a deviation for a height on the maximum height permitted in the underlying LI5 zone is 50 feet. And as we are proposing 61 feet, 6 inches. So we do exceed the maximum height permitted in the underlying zone by more than 10 feet or 10%.
Mr. Cronk, could we just go back one issue with respect to sure. The approval of the tower? Would T-Mobile agree for the approval to sunset 90 days after CO is issued for the new building that's going to be constructed on the site, at which time the tower would be removed?
Yes, that is fine. We are actually working very closely with the redevelopers of the site. So we have their latest drawings. We already have started our drawings because we are going to need to seek approval for the installation on the rooftop. So we will be moving towards filing that, pretty much as soon as we get this temp on the air. So we'll be ready to go.
And you understand that the property owner is going to be filing for that approval with the planning board pursuant to the redevelopment plan within the next 30 days. That's the expectation?
Yes, I believe that is the plan.
And Mr. Cronk, the applicant marked a letter dated August 8th or August 9th, 2023. It's a letter from my office to James Clarkin, setting forth T-Mobile's position with respect to this, with setting forth that stipulation. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and that was marked as Exhibit A5. And then have you reviewed Mr. Hinterstein's planning memo to the board dated August 9th, 2023?
Yes, I have.
And do you have any comments regarding that memo?
The only question I had with regard to that memo was under number 3. Since the proposal to return to the building will be conforming with the redevelopment plan, I was thinking we would be going to the planning board instead of the zoning board retaining jurisdiction. That was the only question I had on that.
Mr. Purcell and I have discussed this. That's really not an issue for the zoning board at this time. That jurisdictional question will be answered at the time in the future when that comes up.
Okay. That was the only question I had regarding that memo.
Okay. I think my comment was more in the realm of, if for some reason during construction, the need comes up for the temporary pole to be relocated again. For some reason,
this isn't being relocated.
I hope it doesn't. Yeah.
That's understood. Yeah, and that's understood and stipulated too.
I was just trying to. Yeah. I just wanted to address the jurisdictional issue. I thought.
So Tim, could you just go over now your proofs for the D3 use variances, the bulk variances, and the height?
Yes. Under the D3, we address this deviation under the Coventry Square analysis. Essentially, the fact that the framers of the ordinance are already determined that this is an appropriate location for a wireless telecommunications facility. What we really do focus on in this application is the deviation from those conditional use standards. And as I mentioned, there are two deviations to them. The first is a 1,000-foot setback from a residential property line, where 553 feet is proposed. As you saw on the aerial photograph, And the engineering drawings, we are actually, you know, we worked again closely with the redeveloper of the property to find a location that was the maximum distance away from the residential zone. There's no place that we could obtain a greater setback than the 553 feet due to the, you know, proposed total demolition of the existing building and the construction of a, you know, a different building, different configuration. So they had very little space available. And, you know, this was the farthest that we would were able to, you know, locate this temporary facility. The other conditional use deviation relates to the setback of the side yard setback. Where 200 feet is required from all property lines, and we are proposing 17.5 to the base of the tower and 25 feet to the tower. Once again, this is purely related to the proposed demolition and construction activities. We are, you know, there was no place that we were able to go, and certainly the temporary nature of this installation and the fact that we are only proposing this location for 2 years certainly does mitigate that, as opposed to a permanent installation. And also the fact that we are, you know, tucked in between two warehousing and storage facilities, both in the LI5 zone, and where this use is also permitted. So we are completely compatible with the property lines that we are violating the deviation on the required setbacks there. So as I mentioned, under the Coventry Square standard, we focus more on whether the subject property would remain particularly suited for this use, despite the deviations. And I certainly believe that these deviations for a temporary facility would render this property continue to be particularly suited for the wireless telecommunication installation. That is temporary in nature and conditionally permitted on the subject property. With regard to the negative criteria under the Coventry Square, the analysis focuses more on the damaging of the character of the neighborhood. And as you saw from the photo simulations, and that's why we prepare them and prepare the balloon test, you certainly can see while there is some visibility to the surrounding areas, including the residential areas of R10, that the visibility associated with this installation certainly is not something that will rise to the level of damaging the character of the surrounding neighborhood. And besides the visibility associated with the tower, this use is identical and the equipment's identical to what's been on this building and broadcasting for years. We do have somewhat of a D6 deviation. As I mentioned, the underlying LI5 zone does have a 50-foot maximum requirement. We are proposing 61 feet 6 inches, but I really do believe that this would be subsumed under the wireless telecommunications ordinance, because in that ordinance, the underlying wireless zone does permit a tower up to 100 feet for, 110 feet for a single use tower. And as was mentioned earlier, this is designed for co-location. Not sure that anybody's going to use it for co-location due to the temporary nature of the facility, but we do comply with the height requirements of the tower itself. And also the height is actually subsumed into the use, because if the board were to grant us the conditional use approval, but would tell us we could only have the 50 feet, essentially that would render this property useless for this engineering driven technology. So the height itself does become part and parcel of the use. And and with regard to the underlying setback variance for the LI5 zone, 50 feet is required. Once again, we have the same 17.5 feet to the ballast frame and 25 feet to the tower. I do believe the board can grant that relief under the flexible C2 deviation and the fact that the purposes of the MLUL would be advanced under small a, since the site does promote the general welfare, since the carrier does possess the requisite FCC license. I do believe the variance can be granted without a substantial detriment to the public good. Certainly don't believe there is a substantial detriment. Really, the only detriment is the visibility, and it would not rise to that level. I do believe the benefits of deviation would substantially outweigh any detriment. The detriment, once again, would be primarily the visibility of the temporary tower and the ability to continue to provide wireless telecommunication services to the residents, the businesses of Piscataway, as well as the traveling public on 287. And I do believe the variance would not substantially impair the intent and purpose of the zone planner zoning ordinance, since we are a conditionally permitted use at this location, and this is a temporary structure, and we will be returning to the new building, certainly would not impair the intent and purpose of the zoning ordinance.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kronk. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Henry, do you have any comments first?
No, I think all my comments were addressed. I believe they agreed to the time limit, the 90 days of the variance sunsetting after the 90 days, a certificate of occupancy. So that satisfies my comments. May want to check with John.
I will. Mr. Chadwin.
Yes, I did submit a report dated July 24, 2023. The testimony has addressed the most critical one. Was a time frame for when the temporary tower would be removed. I don't know, Jim, if you think they should have some kind of restoration bond to make sure it comes down if for some reason the redevelopment plan doesn't go forward.
Mr. Purcell.
So the question is, should we have require a bond if the redevelopment plan doesn't go forward?
Well, you're basically at the control of the redevelop.
So
if for whatever reason they don't go forward, it doesn't sound like that's the situation, but.
Well, I guess.
If they don't remove the existing building, we're staying on the existing building. So they're not going to remove the existing building until they have their approval. So we would just stay there.
They remove the building, but they don't build the warehouse. <All right.
laughs> Then we're coming here for another application.
Yeah.
I don't want to make this a big deal.
Let me comment because I did think about that. I did have that thought did cross my mind because I know in talking to Mr. Clark and we were paying this to the CO. If we could say that that we would peg it to the CO 90 days after the CO was issued or 2 years after the date of the approval, whichever is first, I think that would probably allay your fear, Mr. Chadwick, if this does not at all move forward.
I'd give you a little more time than 2 years, but that's fine. Either cap on it or this doesn't go on forever.
So we'll make it 3 years.
Okay. I think that's good because if all of a sudden we didn't have a building to go back on, we would, need a little more time for a plan B.
So we'll make that 3 years.
3 years or 90 days from the issuing of the CO.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
The other comments in the report have been addressed with testimony.
Thank you, John. At this time, anyone on the board have any questions or comments or concerns for these witnesses? Hearing none, I'd like to open this up to the public. Anyone in the public have any questions, concerns, or comments?
We have several. I have an M. Parik.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Parik, I need to swear you in. Could you raise your right hand? You swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth.
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Could I have your name and address, please? If I have your name, could I have your address, please?
My name is Mithil Parikh. I live in 4647 New Brunswick Avenue, Piscataway.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, so I live on the group of residents which was referenced several times in this discussion, which lives next to the building, and I'm the closest one to the tower. I have a question for Daniel Chuck, since he's the most expert on the radiation. My question is, what is the safest distance to live from this existing antennas? According to the, you mentioned some Radiation Protection Act.
Yes, well, the FCC has done significant amount of research on whether RF emissions are safe. So the FCC has many studies that prove that you will be safe in the region.
So, but what is the limit? What is the distance? Is it 100 feet, 1,000 feet? There should be something distance, right?
Yeah, no, I understand that, Mr. Check. I think what he's asking is that there's a, you know, the FCC says you can't get, you know, right up against the antenna, correct? That there's certain spatial distance at which point it's safe. And can you comment on what that would be in this case?
Yes, that is correct. You can't be standing directly in front of an antenna, as that is not safe due to the exposure being so high when you're so close. But that is not possible given that this structure is mounted 60 feet in the air. So there's no way that the general public would ever exceed the limit.
Okay, so you mean to say that I live, when I measured it on the Google Maps, I live around 700 feet from the antenna. And honestly, I just moved 2 years ago and I didn't know that there is an existing antennas on the existing building. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been moved here. But now it was like 500 feet from my house. So my question is 500 feet distance from my house is safe to live from the antennas? Because I have a four-year-old daughter and I'm me and my wife both work from home. So we are practically 24 hours, 365 days from home.
The RF emissions inside your home would be significantly less. These RF emissions are calculated if you were standing outside of your house, but inside your home, the values that I've provided today, they would be even lower. So you would be safe. In
okay, so
yes,
I am safe in my house. Lower, higher, I don't know about the values, but in short, I'm safe in my house.
You're safe anywhere in that you could achieve any location and on the general, like where the general public can be. Yes, you are. I've assured that these calculations are correct and that you will be safe. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all from me.
Are there any other from the public? Any other hands up?
Yes, there is. Oh, they brought their hand down. There was a Bob Sisk. I don't know if he still wants to speak. And his hand's back up again. Yes, Bob Sisk.
Yeah, Mr. Sisk, I need to swear you in. Could you raise your right hand? Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
Yes.
Your name and address, please.
My name is Bob Sisk. My address is 4635 New Brunswick Avenue.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm the yellow number two on your map. And myself and Mr. Kronk, I think, are the only two that were at the meeting in 2003 when we discussed this. And the question came up about the safety, obviously, for RF frequencies and what do you have for data? And obviously, at the time, he said, we don't have any. It's new technology, new and emerging technology, I believe, is the sentence that he said. And so now we have 20 years that's gone by. Can you show me the data and the studies that have happened between then and now on the safety of the RF frequencies?
Well, Mr. Sisk, I think Mr. Check would be the person to, if you have any questions about RF safety. Mr. Kronk is our planner. So Mr. Check, would you like to respond to that?
Well, as I stated before, you know, the FCC has the limit they have set that they deem as, based on their countless research, that they deem is safe. And according to our calculations, you should not be concerned of RF emissions at the time, as you know, our admission report shows that we are well below the limit.
Are you aware that the limit in the United States is 60 times greater than any other country? According to the FCC's numbers.
And I'll just say that, you know, from a legal perspective, you know, that the pertinent question is, what is the FCC standard here? The Telecommunications Act says that that's the only applicable question in these cases is, what is the FCC standard, and do we need that standard? Any other consideration of health and safety impacts is, you know, not to be considered by state, local governments in acting on these applications.
Yeah, and I'm impressed. You pulled together some very smart people, and I'm definitely not one of them. I'm just trying to take care of my family. We moved here 20 years ago. This tower will stare right into the bedroom of my son. There's a lot of neighbors here that moved out because of what was going on there right after it happened. And, you know, it's going to be something we're going to be staring at. I mean, I could throw a baseball from his bedroom window and hit that tower. And you described the safety is based on the distance from the tower, and that's half the truth. The other half is time. It's distance and time is what creates safety. So if you're far away, but you're there for a really long time, you're going to absorb the same amount of frequency. So that's why we're concerned. And now what you guys are proposing, and I use the word minor and subtle and small changes, and I really want the board to think about this for a second. They're not. You're talking about 20% taller. You're talking about 17 feet from 200 feet. You're talking about major changes, and then we get to look at it. We're only talking about the visible looking at it, but now being exposed to it for 2 full years. That tower is way bigger than the one that's sitting on top of the building, and you guys promised that you would cover it last year for this to get approved by the board. They said, okay, can you build some covers around it so the neighbors don't have to stare at it? And they did. They built boxes around it. Now this is just going to be a pure tower standing straight up for everybody that pulls in and wants to buy a property in that neighborhood. Go, whoa, we're out of here. And, you know, I know I saw the one picture there where it didn't look like a big deal, but that's not for my property, and it's even worse for my property. Our request is that you take your tower and go over across the street to the new warehouse that's there and just put it there. You'll still have the same puzzle piece that you need. You'll still have the same colors on your map, and you'll still be able to compete with AT&T for the space. It's across the street. That's all we're asking. Don't put the temporary one in the parking lot staring back at us. Move it across the street and put it on the building that's there. And you might find out you like that even better and make it permanent. They'll enjoy the revenue the same way Paychex enjoyed the revenue for all these years. And the township of Piscataway won't be losing anything. That's our request. And who is going to accept the responsibility for the safety of the residents? Is it T-Mobile or is it the township of Piscataway?
You have anything else, Mr. Sisk?
Just waiting for the answer to that question.
That question cannot be answered.
Why not?
Can't be answered. I'm the board's attorney, and I'm telling the board it can't be answered.
Can the executives from T-Mobile and the hired help here answer that question?
The board, I'm telling the board that question cannot be answered. Nobody has to address that anymore. Okay. Do you have anything else?
Purcell, would you answer that question?
I said to Mr. Purcell, he's not to address it anymore, Mr. Sisk. Do you have anything else?
No, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Buckley, are there any other hands up at this time?
Yep, now we have more. Kelly Haber? I'm going to say it wrong. I apologize.
That's okay. It's Kelly Haber.
Oh, it's close.
Ms. Haber, I need to swear you in. Could you raise your right hand?
Yes.
Swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth.
I do.
Your name and address, please. I have your name. Your address, please.
My name's Kelly Haber, Heyboer. I live at 57 School Street, Metuchen, and my family owns a house at 4622 New Brunswick Avenue.
Thank you.
I had two questions. The first one is, you said that this will be a temporary tower that would be taken down within 90 days of the CO of the new building. And then the question was rightly raised, what if the new building doesn't get built? Or what if, you know, they don't get the financing and don't build? So you mentioned 3 years that it would be up. So would it be whatever comes first?
Yes, whatever comes first.
Okay. And my second question is, why this particular location? Why not move the tower to the front of the property closer to Washington Avenue, where it would be further from the residences?
Mr. Pronk, you want to speak to that?
Sure, Ken. The reason we could not get any farther away, especially closer to the front of the building, is due to, one, the demolition of this building, and then the construction process for the new building. They're not going to be exactly in the same footprint, and there's no ability to move the tower once it's up. So it was due to the construction requirements of the property owner that's redeveloping. And this was the maximum location, maximum distance from the residential zone that we could locate it without interfering with operations or requiring it to be moved, which can't be done after it's up.
Because this is in view from my property, my family's property, from our second floor. This, we have a picture window. This is directly in view from there. So anywhere else on the property would be better for us. I know it's a visual problem. And lastly, was...
But just one other thing is, you're saying in the front of the building, when they tear down the building, you're not going to have a building there to block it either. So, I mean, tucked over there, at least there's some vegetation, you know, in that little, you know, nook area.
There's no vegetation in the air.
But it's a short tower, so there is, yes.
It's closer to us than it could be. And lastly, was anything explored moving this to a neighboring building where it could be covered up as it was on the previous building?
With regard to temporary facilities, using the existing buildings is not feasible. There's just too much, modification required when this type of insulation goes into a building. So the temporary structures normally are, you know, some type of ballast pole, or you might have seen the cows, the cell on wheels. Those are the type of structures we use for temporaries, but modifying buildings in temporary nature is just not feasible.
Not feasible meaning in terms of cost?
It takes, you know, the time and the modification of buildings to put up a temporary. It's not practical.
Okay, and I just asked the board to consider the neighborhood that surrounds this, and it looks like we're already getting a warehouse coming our way, whether we want it or not. So I'd ask you to consider the people in the neighborhood and what this will look like visually for us for the next several years. But thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Buckley.
It's one big name, Willem Makeda.
It's William Makeda.
Okay, it's one big word. Sorry,
Mr. Makeda. Could you raise your right hand? You swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
I do.
Your address, please.
20 Woodlake Drive, Piscataway.
Thank you,
Mr. Kron. You talked about the construction requirements. I mean, I've seen the building. I know where the area is. I don't understand it. It's a big parking lot. What are the construction requirements that prevent it from being close to the Washington Avenue?
Right now, in front of the existing building, there's not much space. There was just no way from a construction perspective. I'm not building the new building. I had to work in conjunction with the redevelopers of the property, but that was an area that we were not able to go due to, I said, the demolition, construction, staging, mobilization. They have all that already laid out, the property that they need to use for their activities.
This is, you have it, I think, if I'm correct, the tower that you're, the temporary tower is more in, I guess, would be the back of the building towards New Brunswick Road. I still understand. It seems like it's a pretty large, it's a somewhat large parking lot. I don't understand why it can't be towards the front, and they have the area, you know, to the side and closer to the back where you're putting the tower.
Did you see the aerial photo before?
I did.
Where it's located? We're really not towards New Brunswick Avenue. We're located to the north. We're tucked in between the warehouse building on South Washington and the storage facility in that little cutout in the parking lot. You want me to pull that aerial up again?
Go ahead. Pull it up, please.
Sure.
I'm a lawyer, so I'm used to this.
Oh, wrong one. Sorry. Okay. Now I got to share that.
I do many Zoom depths, so I know.
Okay. Okay. So you see where the red dot is labeled site? Yeah. Okay. So we're really not moving. I mean, currently the antennas are on the building. We're not moving towards New Brunswick Ave. Actually, some of the antennas are probably going to be twice as far from New Brunswick Ave as they currently are in the temporary situation. We're moving farther away from that, the R10 zone.
So I can see where, so number two is where New Brunswick Avenue is, right?
Yes, that was the photo location from New Brunswick Avenue, yes. Yep, this is New Brunswick Avenue in the R10 zone. And then everything, the subject property and the surrounding properties are all LI5 zone properties. So the existing antennas are on the building here, which is about half the distance to New Brunswick Avenue as the temporary facility is over here.
Why? I mean, there's a 1,000 feet variance for a reason. Why does it have to be reduced to 553? Why couldn't you just do it? I mean, you talk about construction requirements. It seems it's the construction requirements, not by you know something that it has. It's in your purview. It's in the redeveloper's purview. But I still don't understand why you just couldn't comply.
I don't believe there's any place on the property, even though we have a 10-acre lot where we could meet a 1,000-foot setback from the R10 zone. As you can see right now, we're from New Brunswick Avenue. We're on the farthest part of the property at 553 feet. There's no place we could meet that 1,000-foot setback.
And now why 61 feet versus 50 feet?
The height? The height. We are matching the existing height of the antennas on the building. So the antennas essentially are gonna remain the same height as they are on the existing building in the temporary scenario, and then when they return to the new building. We're maintaining the same footprint. We're not trying to gain additional coverage in the temporary scenario. We're keeping it the same.
But even if you had done, have you done any studies to say, you know, what's the coverage at 50 feet versus 61 feet?
That's not a question for Mr. Crom.
If the height's the same, what was on the building before and what was required and what's been in existence for 20 years, we're matching that. Like the RF engineer said, we're taking a piece out of the puzzle and just putting it back in the practically the same spot.
But you're asking for a variance to raise it. So that's, I guess, the variances are there for a.
Well, okay, put it this way. As I mentioned, the underlying zone, the LI5 zone, has the 50-foot height requirement. But if you go to the wireless telecommunications ordinance that conditionally permits this use on this at this location, at this property, in this zone, and that actual ordinance supersedes the underlying LI5 zone, that ordinance allows 110 feet at this property for a tower with one carrier on it. So we might be,
you don't need this variance then.
It's called, you're an attorney, belt and suspenders. That's what we're doing.
Why are you here then? You don't need the variance.
We still had deviations under the conditional use standards, but you're addressing the height and why we don't go lower. I'm telling you, we can actually go higher under the wireless telecommunications ordinance on this property.
Except you're still asking for a variance of more than, you know, 11 feet.
From the underlying LI zone when the specific wireless telecommunications ordinance actually does supersede it.
Okay, so you're saying that you don't, are you now stating that you don't need it? Is that where
we're just covering
originally?
Okay.
He said that in his testimony that he didn't
think Mr. Crock has not changed his testimony. He said that originally.
Right. Okay. Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Buckley, are there any more hands up?
You're muted.
No, I know. I hit the button. I think click it hard enough. It's getting tired. Mr. Puri, he already spoke. I don't know if he's allowed to speak again. I thought it was one turn, but
if everybody else has spoken and you want to let them go a second time, you may.
Okay. So he's the last one.
Hi, I'm here again. I have like I heard the discussion and I have a request for Mr. Daniel Jack. If he can send me some sort of a written study or anything that I am safe in my house, having a tower 700 feet from my house, I'm exposed to a radiation, that will be really appreciated. Is it possible?
The RF reports are on file in the zoning board office, and you can make a request through an OPR request for a copy of that.
I have that, but it doesn't say anything that I am safe, the residence property as safe from the distance of the antennas. So if there is anything that Daniel Check can provide as a written document or a study that certain distance from the antennas are safe to live, I'll really appreciate it.
First off, Mr. Perry, we can't provide an individualized study for your particular property, but Mr. Check can speak to the fact that, again, you know, the report has been done. And Mr. Check, can you speak to what the effect is, or how you would view the radiation to Mr. Perry's property, given what's in your report?
I can provide FCC. Studies that would further affect what he's asking.
Okay, yeah. So should I send my email address to Miss Laura?
Daniel, we provide the IRF reports. That's what we do, the single RF report to the board.
Okay, and my last request to the board of members, please consider like this tower, please consider to vote like, if this tower was placed near your house, what would you vote? How would you vote? How would you react to that? I'm a proud resident of Piscataway. Please consider the safety of the residents of Piscataway before voting to this request. Please consider that this tower is next. Like when you are voting, please, I don't know what the right words, but please consider when you're voting that if this tower is built next to your house, how would you react and how would you vote? That's all my from my act. Thank you. I'm really nervous about this being a dad of 4-year-old daughter.
Thank you, Ms. Parikh, for your comments. Ms. Buckley, anyone else?
No more public, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I would like to close the public portion of this request. And I would like to make a motion to approve this application. Can I get a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Kalpesh. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Patel?
Yes.
Mr. Hidaka?
Yes.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Yes.
Mr. Ellie?
Yes.
And Chairman Weissman?
Yes.
Mr. Purcell will memorialize this at our next meeting and send a copy to you.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Good night. Moving on to number 13, 23ZB, 23B, Marika Sanders.
Huh?
I'm sorry, Martha Sanders.
It's been a long night. I understand.
You are tired, Mr. Weissman.
Yes.
Good evening.
Hi, John.
Hi, John Sullivan from the offices of Bastola and Sullivan, representing the applicant. The applicant is the owner of the property at 339 Rock Avenue. That is a property that is fully improved with a two-story, two-family dwelling with an attached garage, a shed on the property, and then the related site improvements, which includes a driveway at the front of the dwelling and a parking area to the rear. Property situated in the R7.5 zoning district. As we know, that district allows single-family homes. but it does not allow a two-family home as a principal permitted use. We feel that this two-family use is a legal non-conforming use in the area. And we are seeking a certificate of non-conformity with regard to the original two-family use. However, there was an addition put on the building somewhere in the 1990s. So we are also requesting a D2 variance for an expansion of a non-conforming use. We have submitted a number of documents along with the application, including the municipal tax records, which take us back showing that as early as 1956, this was listed as a two-family dwelling on the property tax card. We provided a copy of the deed as well as site photographs. We provided construction permit records to show that the addition was put on with the permit, and also that recently a permit was issued to install 2 water heaters and 2 boilers on the property. We provided the survey and floor plans, and we provided certificates of continuing occupancy for each unit, which were issued in January of this year. Our witnesses tonight are Scott Sanders, who is the applicant's husband, and I believe it's Alex Doherty, who is going to serve as our professional planner. If I may, I would begin with Mr. Sanders.
Mr. Sanders, could you raise your right hand? Do you swear the testimony you're about to give to be the truth?
I do.
Your name and address, please.
Scott Sanders, 417 Center Street, Piscataway, New Jersey.
Thank you.
Okay, now, Mr. Sanders, your wife is the owner of this property?
Yes.
And how long has she owned it since?
Since 2014.
And she took title from her father, and how long did he own it since?
Since 1985.
And he took title from actually his son. And do you know how long he owned it since?
I believe it was 1983.
So the property's been in the family since 1983?
That's correct.
And has it always been used as a two-family?
Yes.
Now, you provided a survey dated January 24th of 2023. And that survey shows the existing home, the driveway, the rear parking area, and a shed on the site?
That's correct.
And all of that is still existing?
Yes.
And what is the total on-site parking capability?
About 8 cars. 2 in the front and 6 in the back.
And you prepared the floor plans that were submitted to the board?
Yes.
And you could you briefly describe each unit, what it has in terms of rooms?
The first floor has 2 bedrooms, a family room, a dining room, and a kitchen, and 2 baths. The second floor has 3 bedrooms, eat-in kitchen area, and a bath.
And does each unit have a separate entrance?
Yes.
And are there separate mailboxes?
Yes.
And you had mentioned each one has its own kitchen, restrooms, and things of that nature?
Yes.
Now, with regard to the utilities, does each unit have its own hot water heater?
Yes.
Does each unit have its own furnace?
Yes.
And there is no central air conditioning, correct?
No.
And with regard to utility meters for gas and electric, does each unit have its own separate gas and electric meter?
Yes.
And with regard to the water, that's a common meter for both units?
Yes.
And you've had a chance to review the property tax records, and they indicate that this house was originally built in 1914?
That's correct.
And the property tax card from 1956 and all subsequent property tax cards and records show this as a two-family dwelling.
That's correct.
Now, there was an addition built on the house in 1992?
Yes.
And the records show that a construction permit was issued for that?
Yes.
And can you briefly describe that the addition, what it consists of, and where it's located on the dwelling?
It's on top of the existing garage. It was built. It's just primarily an extension of the first floor apartment only. It's created a family room. It has in it a fireplace, a sliding patio door, a door to the front patio or front deck, and that's it, and an entrance from the first floor.
Okay, and that was built over the garage, so it did not increase the footprint of the home?
No.
And it did not add any additional bedrooms to the home?
Nope.
And you recently obtained permits to install two water heaters and two boilers in the house?
That's correct.
And in January of this year, you obtained continuing certificates of occupancy issued by the town, one for each unit?
Yes, sir.
And the property is registered as a rental property with the municipality?
Yes, landlord registration.
And that is all I have for Mr. Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders.
Mr. Sullivan, do you want to call your next witness?
Yes.
Before you start, I didn't get it. Did the addition add bedrooms to either of the units?
No, it did not. It just created a family room for the first floor unit.
So it was always two bedroom units.
Mr. Sanders?
Two bedroom on the first floor, three bedrooms on the second floor.
Three bedrooms on the second floor. But the addition did not expand the second floor at all.
No, sir. Only the first floor has entrance.
Is the basement used at all as part of the apartments, or is it just storage and utilities?
Basement is storage and utilities and only used by me.
Okay. Is the garage is functional, right?
The garage is not used for parking. It's also used as storage. That's why I put, you know, material that I had left over from fixing or having things fixed.
Whatever. So do the tenants have access?
To the garage? No.
No, to the basement.
They could. There's a door that they can go into, but they don't go into it. In other words, they have access to it, but it's not there. They're not using it.
All right. So the addition didn't change occupancy. It did not add additional bedrooms.
No, sir.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, John.
Oh, not a problem. Mr. Dougherty, are you here?
Yes. Yes, I am. Can you see me?
Dougherty, I need to swear you in. Could you raise your right hand? Swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth.
Yes.
Your name and address, please.
Alexander Dougherty, last name is Dougherty. I'm here on behalf of McDonough Associates at 101 Gibraltar Avenue, Suite 1A.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty, would you state your qualifications for the board?
Certainly. I am a licensed professional planner. My education is at Rutgers Blousing with a master's in city and regional planning, concentration in development and redevelopment, certification in public policy. My license PP for New Jersey is good and current, as well as my national AICP certification. I testify.
Mr. Dougherty, you're acceptable as an expert witness.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Dougherty, you're familiar with the area, the site, and the proposal that we've presented to the board?
Yes, I am.
And could you describe the site and the area?
Certainly, if it pleases the board, I do have a visual exhibit packet consisting of six slides of maps and photographs for orientation purposes. And I'll share my screen.
You want to see the site plan previously supplied to the board?
I don't believe so.
No. Okay, we're going to need to mark this as A1, this package. And Mr. Sullivan, you'll get a paper copy to the board for the file?
I will, yes.
So the first slide, if you will, I'll zoom in a little bit here, is the property in question. We're looking at one tax lot, block 215, lot 15.01, indicated here in yellow. We're at the corner of Rock Ave and Elk Street. When we look at the surrounding conditions of this area, It's part of this, what we call a cluster of two and three families right here at this corner, as well as we can see some scattered throughout the area. Yellow representing one families, blue, two, and three red. So it's kind of a little bit of a mix. I think it's a healthy balance here. As we've heard, the plan is simply to validate the one-story addition over the garage that was constructed nearly 30 years ago at this point. The addition was basically an extension of that lower unit, as you just heard. There really was no change to the upper unit. The bedroom counts that were on this property remain. As you see here, we have the garage with the separate entrance here. This is the one dwelling. And then we have the primary dwelling here, the larger structure, with its separate entrance over here. When we look at this zone, we are in the R7.5 residential, where two families are not permitted in the zone. This exhibit here really indicates the, the timeline, if you will. Starting from the right on the side here, this is the original structure where these three arrows are indicating, as well as down here, the garage. This second story addition over the garage is reflective of the construction that took place with construction permits and COs as well. This detached now dwelling garage here is that second unit. When we look at the zone relief here, section 68, certification of pre-existing non-conforming use, and essentially we like to validate this use and have it on the record, as we've just heard real briefly. It's been existing in the public fabric for quite some time. This fifth slide is more of an aerial top-down, if you will, where we see we have the curb cut in the front, we have some parking in the back. We believe we have a healthy balance of off-street parking for these uses. The garage is just being used as storage. It's not sealed off. It certainly can, if need be used in the capacity of a garage. This last slide is your tax assessment cards, if you will, outlined in red, if you will, indicates the important information for tonight. As we can see, the building classification as a two family on the top in red. I'll zoom in a little bit here. We have the building information, the type and use, again, outlined in red is multifamily, the style as well, again, multifamily. So it has been identified several times, as council has opened with, as a two-family use here on the site. Nonetheless, we'd like to expand upon that, have that recognized and validated, as many of the municipal departments have. The essence of this, if you will, we have the D2 relief for the expansion of a non-conforming use for the construction that was after the 1954. As we've heard, that construction took place in 1992. But that being said, the essence of that D2 is a little bit more relaxed than that D1 for the wholly prohibited use test. The essence of the D2 test is site betterment. It's not really the question of whether use belongs in the first place. It's about bettering the site and enhancing that site in the undertone of what that zone requirement is, which is residential. That's when we look at that here, we have really a good looking structure, a good looking site. I don't believe it takes away from that. These two dwelling units, though, on one lot do have unique features that really signify that they are two separate dwelling units. It doesn't really give the impression of your typical two family where you have the two doors side by side. And, it really does look independent, but cohesive at the same time, complementary to the primary larger structure. With that being said, when we look at the positive of this application, the addition enhances the living environment. And like I said, overall complements the architecture of the structure. This type of housing is beneficial. We call this the missing middle housing, which fills that gap between the one family and those larger apartment housing complex we see. Also, when we look at this becoming more of a trend in the planning world in zoning reform taking a hold across the country is what we call these accessory dwelling units. Housing is paramount, finding quality housing, a range of housing options. So this really does fit that narrative as well. The project promotes efficient use of land, variety of land uses, and positive aesthetics. All of the above promote purposes of the Municipal Land Use Law, A, G, I, and M. When we look at the negative criteria, it was interesting because the use has really been here for quite some time. If there really was a substantial negative impact here, I think overall, this would have been addressed by the municipality early on. I believe this relief at this location would be granted without substantial detriment to the public or the zone. The use is compatible with the character of the area, as I showed you on slide 2 from our density map. We do have a fairly healthy balance. It's not overpowering, but there is a balance here of two families within the area. I think it certainly is compatible with that character, and it's not going to overpower it. We have that little bit of a cluster right there, as we see on the slide. The addition has existed without detriment for decades, as I stated. It certainly is not hidden. This is in the public realm. And if need be for the board, for the purposes of tonight, for the validation, if the validation wasn't to be recognized that, you know, this was here, we can certainly satisfy this under the D1, which is the Medici test, where we believe the site, as we see here, is particularly suited. We are on that corner. There is some existing here. It's not out of character. We do believe we have ample off-street parking to accommodate this two-bedroom build-out as well as a three-bedroom. When we look at this, the addition to all the special reasons that were cited above, the site is particularly suited for the use, really in the context of this neighborhood as well. It's an easy retrofit. It's compatible with the uses around it. I don't believe this will erode the intent of the zone plan. Again, this has kind of that cohesive look, but identifiable separate indicating dwelling units, which is that single family zone narrative and undertone. The negative criteria here, the enhanced Medici reconciliation and the omission of the use, I think can be justified by the virtue of the distinct characteristics at this particular site. The relief relates to a distinct site, not the whole zone. This will not constitute a rezone. And I believe the board can move comfortably and favorably upon this application, simply at the validation standpoint. As we've heard, this is in the public realm. This is not hidden. There's construction permits. We have separate water heaters, utilities, and so forth. We have COs for the occupancy of the building. With that being said, I believe the statutory criteria for grant for relief have been met and approval would be warranted. And I'll stop there for any cross or questions.
Are there any questions from anyone on the board? Henry or Sean, do you have any questions or comments?
I don't. The testimony is addressed. I submitted a report April 18, 2023. And the issues raised in that report were answered by Mr. Sanders.
Thank you, John. Henry?
I'm satisfied with the testimony provided by the planner justifying the expansion. I think the two-family use is clearly, I think the proofs have shown that it was an existing, pre-existing non-conforming use. So I think that it's appropriate that, in one hand, I think the certification would, if the addition wasn't on the home, would have been granted. But again, I clearly think with the addition, it's an expansion of a non-conforming use, and the testimony, I think, satisfactorily justified approval of that expansion.
Thank you, Henry. Anyone on the board have any questions? Excuse me. I'm sorry, was someone speaking?
No, I coughed. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Sanders.
I apologize.
Anyone on the board have any questions, concerns, or comments at this time? Hearing none, I'd like to open this to the public. Anyone in the public have any questions, concerns, or comments at this time? Ms. Buckley?
No one, Chairman.
Thank you, Mrs. Buckley. I would like to close the open session, and I would like to make a motion to approve this application. Can I get a second?
I'll second it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Tillery. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Patel? He's still on?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Hidaka?
Yes.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Yes.
Mr. Ely?
Yes.
And Chairman Weissman?
Yes.
Mr. Sullivan, we'll memorialize this at our next meeting and send a copy to you.
Okay, thank you very much. And this time I will say, everybody have a good night.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Moving on to the next item, adoption of resolution from the regular meeting of July 13th.
First resolution is Chad Herbert, which you voted to approve. Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Yes.
Mr. Weissman?
Yes.
Mr. Patel? Mr. Hayduk? Yeah.
Yes.
Next is Kenny Lai, which you voted to approve. Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Yes.
Mr. Weissman?
Yes.
Mr. Patel?
Yes.
Mr. Hayduka?
Yes.
Next is Paul Oglesby, which was on approval. Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Yes.
Mr. Weissman?
Yes.
Mr. Patel?
Yes.
Mr. Hayduka?
Yes.
Next is Rick Ursua, which you voted to approve. Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Yes.
Mr. Weissman?
Yes.
Mr. Patel?
Yes.
Mr. Hayduka?
Yes.
Finally is Mark Dufour, which you voted to approve. Mr. Tillery?
Yes.
Mr. Mitterrando?
Yes.
Mr. Weissman?
I had abstained from that. I had to recuse myself.
Abstain from this. Thank you. Mr. Patel?
Yes.
Mr. Hayduka?
Yes.
Those are all the resolutions I have this evening.
Thank you. Can I get a motion to adoption of the minutes from the regular meeting of July 13th?
All in favor?
Aye.
In favor? Aye. Moving on. Adjournment. Can I get a motion?
Yes.
Yes.
Second? Everyone have a good night.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the summer. Good evening,
everyone. Good night, everyone.
Take care.
Yep. See you guys in September.
Yep. Enjoy.
All right. Bye.
Bye, guys.